Smoke rode right up to the Knight Rider. And just as the man realized he was not looking at a Bar V head, Smoke leaned over and knocked him clear out of the saddle.
Hey!
Smoke dismounted.
What's the goddamn idea, you son of a bitch?
The man reached for his gun and Smoke knocked it out of his hand.
Ow!
Smoke then proceeded to beat the man to an unconscious pulp. Smoke tossed him belly down across the man's saddle, tied him securely, and slapped the horse on the rump.
Get off!
He knew the animal would head straight for the corral. Smiling, Smoke swung back into the saddle and went in search of more night herders. Long before first light, Smoke had cleared the Bar V range of night hawks. He sent three packing, riding hell-bent for leather toward a more hospitable climate. And he either whipped with his fists or clubbed over the head four more, tying them across their saddles and sending the horses racing back to the corral, jumping and bucking under their strange load. Smoke headed for the high country and some food and sleep. He was still smiling as he plopped his hat over his eyes and leaned back his saddle for a pillow. The sun was just coming up, and he was less than a mile from Judd Vale's mansion.
Get him, damn it! Put a rope on him and drag that bastard back in here! $10,000 to the man who brings him in, dead or alive! Don't just stand there staring at me! Ride, goddammit!
40 riders left the ranch complex in a cloud of dust, which was exactly what Smoke had planned on them doing. He knew that they would not expect him to be within 10 miles of Judd Vale's mansion, much less standing on a brush-covered ridge overlooking the estate. Smoke had carefully picketed the steel dust over good graze in a small pool of collected water. Water enough for a couple of days. If he didn't return, the steel dust could break free with little trouble and head back to the Box A range. Smoke took his time studying the ranch layout through field glasses, including ways to reach it and ways to get out once there. Judd had chosen his building site carefully, including a little creek that ran some 300 yards behind the out-of-place mansion. Smoke removed his boots and slipped on moccasins. He carefully checked his guns, wiping them free of any dust that might have collected. He removed his Winchester from the boot and checked it, making sure it was loaded full up.
You take care, boy.
He patted the steel dust on the neck. Then he started to move out. Movement on the other side of the creek halted him. He squatted down and watched. He was sure he had seen movement. Or had he? He waited. There. Yeah, he'd been right. Somebody or something was sure enough down there. He went back to his saddlebags and got his field glasses. He moved several hundred yards closer to the mansion, adjusted the glasses for range, and once more settled down to wait. Then he picked out the shape of a man. It startled him as the face of the man came into view. It was almost like looking into a mirror. There was some difference, of course, but the facial features of the man were startlingly similar to Smoke's own.
Clint Perkins. Has to be. But what the devil is he up to?
Smoke watched as the man left the creek and ran to one of several privies behind the house. The privy surprised Smoke. He thought Judd would have installed some of those newfangled indoor water closets he'd seen back east. Clint began working his way closer to the mansion, finally ducking into a shed not far from the back porch. Smoke could tell the bird call was not real. Within a moment, a young woman stepped out onto the porch, shaking out a small rug. Someone must have said something from inside the house because the girl turned her head. Smoke could see her lips move in reply. She had an angry expression on her face. Her reply must have satisfied the questioner because she moved off the porch and walked toward an outhouse. She angled toward the privy just behind the shed. That move would effectively block the view of anyone watching from the house, but not from the ridge and Smoke's magnified eyes. The girl didn't go into the outhouse, but she did disappear from view. So the shed either had a back door or a couple of loosened boards.
So, Clint Perkins, the so-called Robin Hood of the West, either has him a girlfriend or is planning to rescue the lady from the sweaty evil clutches of Judd Vale. Probably a combination of both. Looks like this Clint Perkins is quite the ladies' man. I wonder just how many gals Clint has loved and left, and how many wood cults he's got in his back trail.
After only a few moments, a man wearing two guns belted around his waist stepped onto the porch, and judging from the expression on his face, started yelling. The girl appeared, seeming to come from out of the privy, and from the expression on her face, she seemed to be yelling at the man. When she reached the porch, the man slapped her, staggering her, only the railing preventing her from falling off the porch. He grabbed her by the arm and hurried her into the house, slamming the door behind him.
Interesting. I wonder how many more young ladies Judd Vale is keeping against their will in that huge mansion.
Smoke settled back into a more comfortable position, his back to a tree, his hat on the ground beside him. And he waited and watched.
Hell, I might not have to do anything for a change except enjoy the show.
Smoke shifted his attentions to the front of the mansion as Judd Vale stepped out onto the porch with a cup of coffee in his hand and took a chair. Smoke envied him that cup of coffee for a fact. His had been a cold camp the night before, and he sorely missed his usually full pot of hot, strong black cowboy coffee upon waking up. He contented himself by chewing on a biscuit sandwich made with fried salt pork and chasing it down with sips of water from his canteen. The girl Smoke had seen meeting with Clint Perkins came out onto the porch and began talking to Judd, gesturing with her hands. Judd shook his head a couple of times, and then, with an angry expression on his face, he pointed towards the door. The girl, her shoulders slumped in defeat, walked back inside the house. Judd stood up and hollered something. Three men stepped out of a bunkhouse and walked toward the house. Three more men with the girl in tow, quite unwillingly, Smoke noted, by the way one held onto her arm, came out of the mansion to stand by Judd on the porch. The man holding onto the girl nodded his head, and the three went back into the mansion. Shifting his glasses, Smoke watched as Clint ran the short distance from shed to back porch and then disappeared into the mansion.
Going to get interesting very soon.
Judd's horse was saddled and led to the porch, and Judd and three of his bodyguards rode off. Smoke waited for something to start popping, and it wasn't long in coming. One man was suddenly hurled through a side window, the side of his head bloody. Gunfire shattered the early morning quiet, and one of Judd's bodyguards came staggering out onto the back porch. He fell over the railing and lay still. The third bodyguard fell out of the front door on his back on the porch. The front of his shirt was bloody. Wisps of smoke began leaking out of an open window in the rear of the house as Clint and the girl ran out the back door and toward the creek. Several moments later, Smoke watched as two horses took off. Girl riding astride. They topped the hill and were gone.
Robin Hood strikes again.
Smoke took out another biscuit and settled back, just as Judd Vale and his bodyguards came galloping back to the ranch. The fire was confined to the kitchen and was extinguished in a few minutes. Judd was talking to the man who had been bashed on the noggin and tossed out the side window. Smoke risked to move in closer to hear what was being said.
So it wasn't Jensen all along. It was that damn Clint Perkins.
They look enough alike to be brothers. Be easy to mistake them in the dark.
Maybe they are brothers. Did Smoke Jensen come in here to help him out?
No, he doesn't have a brother. Not anymore. His brother was killed in the war. Tortured and killed by a group headed by three men who later moved into Idaho. Jensen killed them all and destroyed the town.
And what's he doing here, boss?
Exactly what he said he was doing. He was just seeing the country when we braced him. That got his back up, and he stayed. We brought it on ourselves.
And what'll we do about it?
Kill him.
Meanwhile, a bar V hand had gotten close to Smoke's hiding place while taking a shortcut to a search area. He now found himself flat on the ground, looking up into the cold eyes of Smoke Jensen, with a knife blade across his throat. There were any number of questions he wanted to ask, but wisely, he kept his mouth shut, figuring if Jensen wanted him to talk, he'd tell him so.
Who's in the house besides Judd Vale and his men?
Nobody, I swear it.
The girl who got away, who is she?
Susie, somebody or another. Nestor's kid from over Wyoming territory.
She was the only servant?
If that's what you want to call what she done, yeah. She can't cook and don't clean house. It's like a boar's nest in that house. There was two more girls. One run off, never seen her again, and Judd killed the other. It was an accident, Judd said. He broke her neck whilst they were messing around, you know?
Sounds like a nice, gentle fellow, this Judd Vale does. What's Clint Perkins' beef with Judd?
Lord, man, I don't know. Except that Perkins is crazy, I reckon. He hates rich folks. I do know that.
Where you wanted?
Nowheres.
You want me to cut you a second mile?
Kansas!
What for?
I robbed a store. I was down on my luck and needed some cash.
You ain't telling me everything.
And Nebraska. I robbed a bank. I killed the teller. But that's it. You gonna turn me in?
Not if you level with me.
Anything you want. Just anything at all, Mr. Jensen. You want me to get down and howl like a dog? You just say so.
Is there any puncher on Vale's payroll who isn't wanted by the law?
Lord, no. Judd likes to hire people on the Hoot Owl Trail. He's got more control over them. There's more outlaws down yonder than at Robber's Roost.
And Judd Vale wants to be king in this part of the state.
Hell, he is king.
Uneasy lies the head that wears a crown.
Huh?
Shakespeare said it.
I ain't never heard of him. What outfit does he ride for?
Forget it.
Whatever.
Smoke stuffed a gag into the man's mouth and tied him to a tree. He picked up his rifle and began making his way toward the creek that ran behind the mansion of Judd Vale. He wasn't worried about being spotted by any ranch hands. There weren't any hands left on the ranch, except those gunslingers and bodyguards in the house with Judd. Every hand, including the cook, was out looking for Clint Perkins and the girl. The day had turned cloudy along with the coolness. Smoke knew any gunfire would be muffled by the humidity, not carrying nearly as far as on a fair sunshiny day. Smoke followed the creek to the rear of the house and then made his way to a pile of wood stacked behind the great two-story mansion. He poked his rifle through a good-sized crack in the stack. The first shot tore through the kitchen wall and ricocheted upward, shattering a chandelier in the fancy dining room and sending bits of glass and cold oil from the expensive lamp spraying. Judd Vale and his men hit the floor.
God damn!
The second .44 round glanced off the polished wood of the dining room table and stopped in the china hutch, destroying several plates and cups. The third round bounced off a kettle in the kitchen and shot wickedly around the stove before rolling across the floor, coming to rest about 3 inches from Judd Vale's nose.
Let's get the hell out of here.
The men began crawling across the floor toward the rear of the house. But outside, Smoke anticipated that move and lowered the muzzle of the Winchester.
Yeah! Somebody get around to the side of the house. Try to get him in a crossfire.
Smoke was off and running, coming to rest behind the gazebo in the side yard. He saw a bodyguard come chugging around the corner. He knocked a leg out from under him. Dragging his limb, the man crawled back around to the front of the mansion. Smoke changed locations, back to the rear of the house. He decided he'd pressed his luck enough for this day, and he took a stick of dynamite out of his pocket, capping and fusing the thunder stick. He let it fly and was heading for the creek before the stick landed on the ground and rolled under the porch. Tore the whole damn porch off the rear of the house and busted most of the windows in the back of the mansion. Smoke stopped just long enough to empty his rifle into the back of the house. He then ran toward the ridge and was capped. Smoke cut the bar V hand loose and took the gag out.
What are you gonna do with the... Ow!
Smoke laid that barrel of his pistol on the back of the man's head, ensuring that he would be out for some time to come. He had a whole day of headhunting to do. Eventually, the hand Smoke had busted on the head came to. He found his horse and rode back to the mansion, a lump on his noggin the size of a hen's egg.
I got captured by Jensen.
Where is he now?
Oh, I don't know. He busted me on the head. I just now come to my senses. I don't know how long I've been out.
Son of a bitch! Jason, get the boys in! Jensen was raised by Preacher, probably the best engine fighter the West ever seen. He's gone headhunting, you can bet it. If the boys stay out, he'll do us even more damage. Get them back here, pronto!
How, boss? They're scattered all of 40 miles.
Shit! Shit! That bastard Jensen planned all this! I don't know how or why, but it's all Jensen's fault! Damn Smoke Jensen to the pits of hellfire!
Judd eventually calmed himself and did a little mental figuring. As of last evening, he had 18 hands on the payroll. He had hired 25 men at fighting wages. God knows they hadn't earned a damn penny of it. And he was given another 15 or 20 men. He forgot the exact number. Money just to hang around. Three riders had deserted him last night, thanks to that damn Clint Perkins. Or had it been Perkins? And two more had been so badly beaten that they were out of it for several days. Hell, maybe a week. So savagely mauled that they hadn't even been able to leave the bunkhouse when Perkins and then Jensen attacked the house. He'd lost two of his most trusted men to the guns of Perkins. Jensen had busted the leg of another, and a third had his head busted open.
All right, damn it. You boys stick close to home. I reckon them 40-odd men out in the field can handle with Smoke Jensen.
Gunslick, whose Christian name was Wilbur Hammersmith, his friends called him Hammer, thought that a damn puma had done jumped onto his back, knocking him from the saddle. Then he looked up into the eyes of Smoke Jensen, sitting on top of him, and he suddenly felt an urgent need to relieve his bladder. Smoke balled his right hand into a huge fist.
Oh, hell, man!
When Hammer finally awakened, he had a whale of a headache, and his whole world was upside down.
Oh, what the hell?
It didn't take him long to realize it wasn't the world. It was him. Jensen had taken Hammer's rope and strung him upside down from a tall limb after stripping him down to his long handles and taking his boots and socks and guns.
Oh, some bitch! Why's my head so damn cold?
His hands explored the top of his head.
Ah! He done shaved my head! I'm gonna kill you, Jensen! Damn your eyes, you heathen! This ain't right! Help! Help!
A horseman came riding up.
Buck! Buck Wall, you gotta help me!
How come you got yourself all upside down like that?
Cut me down, damn it!
All right. Hold your damn horses.
Buck was in the process of dismounting when the loop settled over his shoulders and he felt himself jerked from the stirrups.
Whoa!
When Buck Wall woke up, his world was upside down, too. And his clothes were gone, right down to his socks and boots and guns. And there was not a horse to be seen anywhere.
Hammer, the next time you get in trouble, I wish you would just please keep your mouth shut.
Help!
Will you stop that? You're making my head hurt.
Help! Who the hell said that?
Well, it damn sure wasn't me.
By twisting around, they could see a newly hired gunny named Ben Lewis. Someone, well, Jensen for sure, had peeled him buck naked and tied him backwards in the saddle. And from the looks of him, he'd been sitting in that saddle for some time. He looked worn to a plum frazzle.
How am I gonna kill that stinking Smoke Jensen?
Yeah, me too. As soon as I get shut of this damn tree limb.
The hired guns and bounty hunters and would-be toughs began drifting back to the ranch one by one, and they were a sorry sight to behold. Judd Vail sat on the front porch sipping whiskey and viewed the unfolding scene with disgust in his eyes. Glenn Reagan, the punk who fancied himself fast with a gun, was the first back, hoofing it, naked, except for his fancy silver conchoed gun belt, all the shell shucked out of the loops. He wore his empty holsters in strategic locations.
Hey, boss.
Reagan, you are plumb pitiful.
What do you want done with him, boss?
Get him out of my sight. And Jason, get ready for a lot more of the same. Jensen's playing games.
Barstow, the no-good from Colorado way, was the next to come limping in. He was wearing a bush he had uprooted because Jensen hadn't even left him his holsters. Judd just pointed to the bunkhouse and poured another drink. Three of Judd's own regular hands came staggering in about 15 minutes later. They were drawerless and had been tied together in such a way so they had to move in a circle to get any weight. They were so dizzy they fell down in a heap in the front yard. Judd looked at the pile of struggling flesh in front of him.
Jason.
Boss?
Get me a headache powder, will you?
I believe I'll join you. But it can't get much worse than this.
Don't bet on it.
Jaeger, the German gun hand, came in riding his own horse and wearing clothes. But he had a bloody bandage tied around his big head and a very grim expression on his broad face.
Jensen shoot ear off.
At least he left you your britches.
I would rather have mine ear.
Bounty hunter John Wills came riding in without his clothes, his hands tied to the saddle horn. But Smoke had neatly wrapped him up from neck to waist, both his legs, in poison ivy. He was already breaking out and swelling. Judd pointed to the bunkhouse.
Ointment in the cabinet over yonder.
Hammersmith and Buck had found their horses and came riding in with Ben Lewis. No guns or rifles, of course. Jensen was going to have quite a collection before this was over. Of course, Judd knew what he was doing. He was arming those kids of his to the teeth.
Don't any of you say a word. I don't want to hear it.
Judd just pointed to the bunkhouse. He got up and walked into the house, closing the door behind him. He just did not want to see any more of this. But hiding in the house wasn't going to stop the craziness, because Smoke stampeded the Bar V horses that night. He jerked down the corral bars and tossed a stick of dynamite outside the corral so no horses would be hurt, just scared half to death. It was a move that no one expected. After the damage he had done all that day, all of them thought he would head back to the box A. Smoke put an end to those thoughts by emptying his six guns into the bunkhouse. Then he grabbed two more, hung on the saddle horn, and blasted away at the mansion. Sending Judd Vail jumping out of bed, skinning his knee, banging his big toe, and ultimately falling down his own fancy curving stairs in his long handles.
You son of a bitch! I'll get you, Jensen! I swear by my mother's grave I'll get you for this!
Smoke! Don't you look like the cat who licked the cream?
When Smoke had finished telling Cheyenne what he'd done, the old mountain man and gunfighter was just tickled pink.
By God, I just bet that was some sight to see. I'd have given a month's wages to see her.
Well, it was fun, most of it. But there's no telling what Judd Vail will do in retaliation.
And Clint Perkins come up and stole the girl away, huh?
Yeah, he's a tough one. Don't ever sell him short on courage. He's got his share in more of that.
Smoke had collected 30 pistols and 15 rifles and more than 500 rounds of 44 and 45 caliber ammunition. He had brought them back on the back of one of the horses he had stampeded. He distributed the weapons and ammo and gave Alice and Doreen the clothes he had taken to wash and alter for the boys. He tossed the boots in a pile in the barn for the boys to prowl through.
Osgood has gone to Utah. Be gone for a month or more.
And Judd will throw everything he's got at us. It'll be open warfare from this point on. After what I did to the Bar V, I sure can't blame him.
With little else to do, Chucky, Ed, Eli, Jimmy, Clark, and Buster had busied themselves at the creek, picking up and carefully selecting rocks for the weapons they had been working on. The rocks they picked up were just the perfect size, round and smooth and flawless. They would fit well in the pockets of their slingshots. Maybe they couldn't carry guns around, but they could sure use those slingshots with deadly accuracy. And the youngsters had just as carefully picked out the spots from which they would launch their small war when Judd Vale's men attacked the ranch. They stashed their carefully chosen hoard of rocks and spare slingshots, telling no one else about the cache. But Cheyenne, wise and watchful old man that he was, had seen the boys scurrying about, and he became curious as to what they were up to. So he satisfied his curiosity.
Brave little lads. I do believe it's going to get right interesting around here.
Matthew had been practicing daily with his peacemaker. 1 hour a day, faithfully, every day he practiced his draw. And with lots of ammo available, he could also practice his marksmanship. The boy was a natural. He was better than good. He was awesome in his ability with a short gun.
I hate to see it.
He'd have done it with or without his smoke. I allow as to how it was best that we was here to help him along.
Maybe you're right. But the West is slowly changing, Cheyenne. Perhaps not all for the better. But law and order is coming. And fast guns will be a thing of the past before we know it.
I'll never live to see it. And for all the lawyers and judges with their fancy words and hand-sewn duds, it's going to be years before all the West is tamed. Maybe never. Matthew will be a grown-up man before he'll be able to hang up his guns. And who knows, Smoke? Maybe he'll go on to become a fine lawman. There ain't a bad bone in the lad.
I'm going to encourage him to do just that.
I already been doing that. He seems interested in it for a fact.
That night, Smoke's eyes came suddenly open out of sleep. Something or somebody was in the barn. He looked out the open window without moving from his bunk. It was about 3 o'clock, he guessed. He lay still, his right hand around the butt of a Colt. A sound came out of the darkness just outside the open door to Smoke's own room.
You're awake, aren't you? I didn't think I'd be able to get this far without you hearing me.
Perkins?
Oh, my, yes. I've come to lend whatever assistance I can to this little war.
I watched you the other day from the ridges.
Careless on my part not seeing you. You're very, very good. As good as your reputation makes you out to be, I must admit.
The girl with you?
Good guess, compañero.
Gonna leave her here?
I really have no choice in the matter. She'll be much safer with Walt and Alice.
Why do you hate them so? They seem like good people to me.
Oh, I don't hate them. Not at all. I know they think that, but it isn't true. There is a medical term for my mental condition, but I won't bore you with $10 words when a single word can sum it all up rather well. I'm crazy.
You have good days and you have bad days.
Gunfighter you may be, but you are not overcome with ignorance. Yes, that is correct.
Have you sought help?
Oh, my, yes. But unfortunately, the field of psychiatry is still in its infancy, and the methods they use are really quite primitive. And they don't work.
There ought to be some coffee left in the pot. Help yourself.
Oh, thank you. But I'm afraid I must decline your kind offer. How is Mickey?
He's a fine boy.
Oh, good. Doreen thinks I deserted her out of pure callousness. That was not the case. When these twilight moods strike me, I can kill anybody who stands in my way, who speaks to me in a cross manner. I'm sorry for it immediately afterward, but apologizing to a corpse is a rather futile gesture. Don't you agree, Mr. Jensen?
I would think so, yeah.
Should our paths cross again, Mr. Jensen, and I have a rather obvious wild-eyed look about me, You leave me alone. Depart the area immediately. It's for your own good, I assure you.
I remember that. Let me ask you something, Clint. Clint?
But Clint Perkins had vanished as softly and silently as he had arrived.
He's gone. But I'm right here, Mr. Jensen.
Susie?
Yes, sir.
Smoke rose from his bunk and dressed, and then he lit the lamp. Susie was perhaps 18, certainly no more than that. A very pretty girl. She had a wide-eyed, scared look on her pale face.
You don't have to be afraid of me, Susie. Come on. Let's go wake up the house and get you settled in.
Over coffee and bear sign, the story Susie told was one of horror, clearly indicating that Judd Vale was as nutty as a tree full of squirrels. She told of beatings, of being forced into Judd's bed, and into the bed of Jason when Judd was feeling magnanimous. She told of being forced to do things, things about which no decent person should even know. Walt looked sick, and Alice and Doreen almost had an attack of the swooning vapors, both of them fanning themselves vigorously. Cheyenne wore a very uncomfortable look on his leathery face. Rusty's face was red as a beet. Smoke had heard the boys gather around the windows outside the house, but he said nothing about it. They were getting an earful, no doubt about that. Doolittle and Harrison had not been awakened.
Have you seen Judd kill other slaves?
One, but half a dozen have just disappeared. I know where they're buried, though.
Your parents?
Dead. I was on my way to California to stay with my uncle and aunt when outlaws robbed a train. They took me and sold me to Judd. If he finds out I'm here, he'll attack this ranch.
He's gonna do that anyway, girl. Just relax. You'll be safe here with us. When this is over, we'll get you to California.
How did Clint find out you were at the Bar V?
How does he find out anything? He's like a ghost. And no, Doreen, there was never anything between us. He's just been a good friend.
The look Doreen gave Susie silently stated that she believed that about as much as she believed elephants wore pink tights and danced the can-can. Susie met Doreen's eyes and accurately read the other woman's expression. She shrugged indifferently.
Mickey can sleep in with his mother. Susie, you take the boy's bedroom until we can fix up the other bedroom. Gone, dear. Walt's put fresh water in the basin and the towels on the rack and the bedpan's clean. You get some sleep. We'll talk more in the morning.
Thank you, Alice.
Walt stood up and his wife joined him as they left the kitchen. Doreen and Susie followed. Smoke, Cheyenne, and Rusty sat around the table for a few more minutes, with Rusty and Cheyenne eating up every damn donut they could find.
Near 4:30. No point in going back to bed.
Yeah, I seen that look on your face. What you ruminating about?
Judd Vale, for one thing.
Well, just ride over and call him out and kill him. Me and Rusty and Walt will go with you.
The odd thing is, Cheyenne, I don't want to kill him. He's not right in the head. He isn't responsible for what he's doing. It might come to a killing, but I hope it isn't me who has to do it.
And the other thing?
Smoke nodded his head toward the outside. The three men walked over to the corral.
Walt has confided in me that he's a wealthy man. Why doesn't he hire guns and let them bang it out with Judd's men, Cheyenne?
I've pondered over that my very own self. I can't come up with no firm answer.
I can't believe you two guys.
What do you mean, you red-headed pup? I'll bust you upside your punkin' head.
You better explain yourself, Rusty, if you know something we need to know. Spit it out.
I didn't mean to laugh at neither of you. I just figured that you both knew.
Knew what, you knothead?
Well, as soon as you told me I was working for the Box A, I figured the fire had done reached the grease. But it never dawned on me that Mr. Walt hadn't leveled with you. Hell, well, maybe the old bunch has died out and a new bunch of folks in this area just don't know. Judd Vale is Walt's kid brother.
Oh, for crying out loud. I've been in and out of here for the last 50 years, Rusty. I ain't never heard that story.
Rancher in Montana told me some 5-6 years ago. I'm sorry, boys. I just figured you knew.
So Clint is really Walt's nephew. I wonder what surprises Doreen has in store for us.
I don't.
Not those surprises, Rusty.
I wonder if she's kin to Walt and Alice.
Oh, well, beats me. I done told you all I know.
Are you sure this rancher wasn't just pulling your leg?
I don't think so. We was sitting around the fire one night during roundup, passing bottle around. Mr. Randolph, that was the rancher I was working for at the time. He said that Walt come out to this part of Idaho way back. First white man to settle in this part of the territory.
That much jives with what Walt told me.
And Mr. Randolph said that Walt had left a baby brother behind. I believe he said Illinois or Ohio or some of them faraway places like that. Said that Walt never really knew the kid all that good. He's in diapers when Walt left. Well, kid started getting into trouble right off the mark. Then as the kid got older, the trouble got worse. He's supposed to have raped and killed a woman when he's about 14 or 15. And had to flee, two steps ahead of the law.
Huh. And Walt didn't know what was going on back home.
No way he could have. 1,000 miles away like he was. Sure wasn't no letters being posted to this part of the territory. Mr. Randolph said that kid turned to a life of crime. Bad stuff. Robbing and murdering folks and abusing women. He robbed a U.S. gold shipment. Hundreds of thousands of dollars. Then him and his gang come out this a ways. And Jason's been with it from the get-go, way Mr. Randolph told it. That gold was what set him up in the ranching business. Walt went to see the rancher one day and was shook right down to his boots when Judd Vail, that's the name he took, started talking about where he was from. Walt started writing letters to folks he figured was still alive back home. He started putting two and two together and soon realized that Judd Vail was his baby brother. But he never let on to Judd. Not till about 10 years ago, I reckon. Maybe more than that. And the way Mr. Randolph told it, Judd went into a screaming rage for some reason. Told Walt he would destroy him and take all the gold that Walt had found. Walt tried to tell his brother that there wasn't no more gold on the box, eh? The strike had been a fluke and had played out. But Judd wasn't having none of that.
I wonder why Editor Argood didn't tell me all this.
Well, he probably figured you already knew, just like I done.
Walt walked up.
And now you know it all.
I wish you had told me, Walt.
Shame. It was shame that prevented me from telling you.
God damn it to hell, you're lying, Walt. You lied to me right from the start. Now clear the damn air and level with us.
There isn't much else to clear. He's my brother, boys. Our blood is the same. I had him in rifle sights once and couldn't pull the trigger. I just couldn't kill him. Even knowing what trash he is, what he'd turn into, I just couldn't do it. That's why until recently, at least, I was just letting him run all over me. Then I got mad. I sent out word that I was hiring gunfighters. But if I paid $100 a month, Judd would pay $200, and so on. I had half a dozen gun slicks. They left me and went to work for Judd. I hired some straight punches. Judd and his men drove them off or killed them. I finally reached the point where I just didn't know what to do. I was confused, alone with the wife and Doreen and Mickey, scared for them and for myself. I'm not a young man. There's more than 20 years difference between me and Judd Vail. Or rather, Paul Burden. Then, Smoke, you showed up.
Doreen is no kin to you. No blood kin.
No.
Walt, I told Cheyenne that I don't want to kill Judd. He needs killing. I'll be the first to admit that. He's a vile, loathsome person for a fact. But I don't want to be the one to pull the trigger on him. And I won't, unless he pushes me to it or gets caught up in gunfire while attacking this ranch. The man is insane. He needs to be confined in an asylum for the rest of his life.
You think I haven't tried to do that? I personally called on the territorial governor and informed him of Judd, without telling him Judd was my brother. He sent people in to talk with Judd. Judd charmed them. He has that ability, just like his son, Clint. And just like Clint, he can go off the beam into a raging, killing darkness at the smallest slight or word. Smoke, I don't know what else I can do. I have reached my wit's end in this matter.
We'll work it out, Walt.
Thanks, Smoke.
Walt walked off toward the house.
Just how do you figure we're going to work it out, Smoke?
I have no idea.
Susie slept in late, it being almost noon when she walked out into the front yard. When the weather was good, the boys took their meals at a long setup table in the yard. When the weather was bad, they had to take shifts eating in the house. Susie was amazed at the youth of the hands and equally amazed at the ages of the old men. No one asked her to lend a hand with the cleaning up. She just fell to it as one by one the boys finished their nooning and got up going back to work.
Rider coming!
Who is it?
Blackjack Morgan. You never know about Blackjack, or Jackson, for that matter. They operate under a strange code.
Matthew had moved over from the table to stand by the rose bushes planted in front of the house. The hammer thong was off his peacemaker.
You just steady down, boy. Blackjack's not looking for trouble.
Blackjack reined up at the hitch rail.
Coffee's hot, Blackjack. You're welcome to a cup and something to eat if you're hungry.
Neighborly of you, Smoke. Coffee sounds good. Is them bear sign I spy?
Yes. Help yourself, Mr. Blackjack.
Oh, thank you kindly, man.
Blackjack poured coffee and got a couple of donuts. He looked at Smoke.
This ain't what you'd call a social visit. At least, not right off, it ain't.
I didn't figure it was.
That editor fella's gone to Utah. Won't be back for a month or more. And that youngster he hired to cover the news has recently got himself a bad case of jitters. Didn't take much. Just a little talking to us all. He won't be coming around here no more.
We expected that.
Damnedest outfit I ever did see. These boys doing a man's work. Drove that herd all the way to the railhead without a bobble. You boys is all right in my book. I brung a message from the Bar V. Judd Vale has done declared war on anybody riding for the Box A. Man, woman, or child. And that don't sit too well for a few of us. Me and Jackson most especially. I don't believe in mistreating women or hurting no kid or dog. So I ain't gonna do it. Neither is Jackson. But that's just two out of about 45. With more coming in shortly. The odds is too high, Smoke. You can't win this one.
These folks have no place else to go, Blackjack. So we have to win it.
Figured you'd say that. You being who you is and all that. I ain't got nothing personal against you, Smoke. But that $10,000 the judge done hung on your scalp is just too good for me to walk away from. That money'd get me a right nice spread down in Texas. And I can hang these guns up.
You ain't never gonna hang them guns up, Blackjack. You've been around too long. You're one of the old breed. There's always gonna be some punk kid who wants to make himself a rip.
Oh, not me, Cheyenne. I'm gonna change my name and bury myself down near the Barillas. Me and Lassiter. We done talked it over. So, me and Lassiter will be waiting for you over at Preston, Smoke. That's where it's gotta be, and you know it.
Smoke nodded. Blackjack cut his eyes to Matthew.
Get shut of that gun, boy. It ain't nothing but grief. You already got the stamp on you, but it ain't too late to shake it off. As young as you is, you kill another man, you're gonna be marked.
I plan on becoming a lawman.
That's even worse. Putting up with drunks and whores and tin horns and gamblers, it ain't no life. Of course, my life ain't been all that great neither. Much obliged for the coffee and bear sign. Lassiter's just over the ridge. We're heading for Preston. I expect we'll see you there, Smoke.
Now that is interesting.
Not really. You're setting me up, that's all.
You can bet on that. Blackjack and Lassiter will probably have four or five men with them. Their plan is being the only one standing after the battle.
That's the way I read it at first. Now I'm not so sure.
What do you mean, son?
Judd wants me away from the ranch. Probably figuring I'll take someone with me.
And he'll hit the ranch when you're gone?
That's the way I see it.
And if you don't go into Preston, Blackjack and them others will spread the word that Smoke Jensen has turned yeller.
That kind of talk never bothered me, Cheyenne.
Son, you can't face 7 or 8 men alone.
I faced 18 alone one time. I did take some lead, but I put them all down. Don't worry, Walt. I have no intention of riding into a setup. If I just stay put, they'll probably make Blackjack and the others so mad they'll do something rash.
Like what?
Oh, like moving their ambush a lot closer than Preston. Like, over to the trading post.
And you'd ride over there to face them? One man against 7 or 8 gunslingers?
I'd give it some serious thought.
That man said that more gunfighters will be coming in shortly.
I'm fresh out of ideas, Doreen. What do you want me to do, girl?
You could put the ranch up for sale, advertise it in the paper, and papers all over the state. That would draw a lot of attention to our situation and maybe make Judd Vale back off.
She's got a point, Walt.
I've been out here going on 50 years. Me and Alice fought Indians and outlaws, blizzards and droughts. We came close to packing it in several times. This ain't one of them times. If you all was to leave, and I wouldn't blame you none if you was to pull out, I'm staying.
We're staying, Walt.
The younger of the boys looked at each other, all thinking they had best head back to the creek as soon as possible and gather up some more stones for their slingshots. Matthew hitched up his gun belt.
This here is a right good job of work. So me and Harrison is staying put. If I'm gonna die, I'd rather it be with food in my belly and some coins to jingle in my jeans.
I'm staying.
So are we.
Count me in too.
That's settled. Let's get back to work.
The sheriff rode out to the ranch 2 days after Blackjack Morgan had tossed down the challenge. He had three tough-looking deputies with him. He told Walt to get his crew together, his adult crew. Only Smoke, Cheyenne, and the women were close to the house. They sat at the long table in the front yard and talked.
Lions being what they are, I ain't rightly sure this place is even in my jurisdiction. But I know goddamn well that Preston is, excuse my language, ladies, and I ain't gonna have no gunfights in my town. I thank you for not riding in.
I'm waiting for them to move in closer to the ranch.
The sheriff nodded his head. He waved his hand at the three deputies.
This is it, folks. You're looking at the law enforcement in this county. Providing, that is, the Box A is even in my county. New lines was drawn up last year, and it's still all confused. But that ain't the point. The point is that Judd Vail's done hired himself about 60 men, all drawing fighting wages. And there ain't a damn thing I can do about it. Oh, I could ride over to the bar V and try to throw my badge around. But y'all know how much good that would do. He just tell me he was getting ready for roundup and hired all them men to punch cows. Well, there may still be warrants out on Judd back east. I know the story. And I've sent telegrams to them folks back yonder. The parents of that girl that Judd was supposed to have killed is dead. The lawmen who were in charge when it happened are gone. So that's a dead end. No help there.
What you're trying to say, Sheriff, is that we're on our own here.
Well, that's blunt put, Jensen, but yeah, that's just about it. You say that Judd attacked your ranch. Can you prove it in a court of law?
I doubt it.
There still ain't no laws about two growed-up men facing each other over gun barrels. There will be someday, but that time ain't here yet. I talked to a man from the governor's office. The governor ain't got the manpower to step in and settle every dispute between ranchers. Territory's just too big. And I've said what I come to say, Walt. I wanted to tell it to you face to face.
I appreciate that.
You told us, Sheriff. Now let me tell you. Just stay out of it. I roughed up a few and killed one the last time. The next time I go headhunting, I'm gonna leave bodies all over the range.
Man, that goes for me too, in spades. I'm getting tired of all this dilly-dallying around. I'm an old man. I ain't got many years left. So it don't make a damn to me if I check out now, just so long as I take a few or a bunch with me, and I plan on doing just that.
I wish you luck.
He's a good man, the sheriff is. I ain't taking what he said near about as hard as you boys. Maybe I just understand the feelings around here better than you.
What do you mean, Walt?
I've tried to tell you time and again, boy. Folks around here is scared of Judd Vail. He's had them buffaloed for years, and it ain't got much better, if any better, since you come along. Man told me last time we went to the post that most of the betting money was with Judd and against you.
You should have told him he was a fool.
I did. Problem was, I don't know how convincing I sounded.
Walt and Alice, with Doreen and Susie right behind them, went back into the house. Smoke and Cheyenne walked to the corral and stood in silence for a few minutes.
You changed your mind any about just riding up to Judd and plugging him?
No.
Yeah, didn't figure so. Still think that'd be the smart thing to do.
You're probably right, Cheyenne, but it just isn't my style.
I'll do it. He ain't nothing but a rattlesnake.
No. But it worries me about him declaring war on the women and boys.
It don't surprise me none. A rattlesnake don't give a damn who he strikes. Sometimes they'll just lay there on the trail, still as death, and watch you go past without even a short rattle. Next time you come by, they'll hit you. Judd Vail ain't got no more sense than a rattler, and he's just about as useless. Come to think of it, a rattler might be worth more. Least they kill rats and mice.
The old rounder limped off toward the bunkhouse and a cup of coffee. Smoke went into the house, told Doreen to fix him a bait of food, and with the food packet in his hand, he went to the barn, saddle and dagger. Rusty had ridden in and was seeing to his horse.
You heading out?
Yeah. Is the herd bunched?
And boxed.
I want you and the others to stick close to the ranch. I don't know how long I'm going to be gone. 3 days, maybe a week. However long it takes me to cut the odds down some.
You going to face Blackjack and them others?
Probably. But it'll be on my terms, not on theirs. Nobody has to leave the ranch. We're well stocked with food. God knows we have enough guns and ammo to stand off a dozen attacks. Keep an eye on the boys, Rusty.
I'll do it. You watch your back trail, Smoke.
I've been doing that since I was 15 years old.
Smoke rode for the Bar V range, keeping to the timber and the brush, riding slow and stopping often to sit his saddle and listen. He marveled at the size of Judd's herds. The man was worth a fortune in beef alone. There wasn't a rancher anywhere who wouldn't be satisfied with these herds. Only Judd Vale wanted more. But then Smoke concluded Judd wanted everything, especially Doreen. Smoke had warned her to stick very close to the ranch and to stop wandering out into the meadows to pick wildflowers. Judd had made his brags that he would have Doreen one way or the other. But whether Smoke's warnings had gotten through to the girl was something only time would prove out. Smoke steered clear of Judd's mansion. What he wanted to see was whether anyone was working Judd's cattle. And after spending most of the afternoon carefully watching from the hills and ridges, he concluded that the cattle had been pretty much left on their own.
So, Judd has pulled in all his hands. Could be an attack on the ranch, but I doubt it. He's tried that once with bad results. So if not an attack against the Box A, then what?
Smoke had come up with no reason for leaving the herd unguarded. Of course, Judd felt, and rightly so, that no one would have the nerve to rustle cattle from him, so his herds were safe.
So what is going on? Why haven't I run into any of the Bar V hands today? Odd. Very odd.
With about 3 hours of good light left, and guessing that he was a good 10 miles, maybe more, from Judd's mansion, Smoke rode to near the top of a high ridge. Keeping in the timber, Smoke dismounted and took his field glasses, making his way to the top of the hill. There, on his belly and under cover, he began carefully sweeping the area. Far in the distance, he picked up the small figures of men, some on foot, some on horseback. They were making a meticulous sweep of the area.
What are they looking for, or who? Certainly not me. Judd knows I've been at the Box A, or have been for days. Have to be looking for Clint. That's got to be it. Has Clint pulled something over the past few days that I don't know about?
Smoke studied the tiny figures of searching men through his field glasses. At least 25 or 30. And that brought yet another thought to Smoke's mind. Where were Judd's other hands and hired guns? That question made him uncomfortable. He decided to get the hell gone from there. He mounted up and rode toward the deep timber that lay to the east of the mansion, but still well on Bar V range. As he rode, he began seeing signs that this area had been searched, and searched thoroughly. He reined up suddenly, knowing then where the other Bar V men were. They were all around him, waiting to see if Clint, if that's who they were searching for, would double back. Smoke found a place which offered deep cover and a good 2 days' graze and water for Dagger. He picketed him and slipped into moccasins. He filled any empty loops with .44s and, taking his rifle, he began engineing his way through the brush and timber. Smoke was under no illusion. These were dangerous men he was surrounded by. And after Smoke's initial attack against the ranch and his making fools of the men, they'd be doubly alert, with more than one of them mad as hell and looking for blood. Smoke's blood. making about as much noise as a drifting ghost. Smoke wormed his way under a pile of blown-down brush and dead limbs, hoping that a rattlesnake hadn't made this spot his home, and he settled in for a time. As he waited, Smoke ran some questions through his mind. Why the systematic search for Clint? Had the man staged another raid, or had Judd just decided to take out his enemies one at a time? Then Smoke rejected both ideas as another thought came to him. Clint Perkins was a wanted man, a fugitive from justice. So what better way for Judd to show the people that he was a straight-up, honest, and law-abiding citizen than by killing or capturing the most wanted man in southern Idaho? That would certainly swing public opinion in his favor. And there was something else, too. After Clint was taken, and Smoke felt the man would not be taken alive, Judd simply could not risk that. Vale could, and probably would, charge that Walt and Alice and Doreen had been hiding the outlaw. And that would further erode Walt's credibility with his neighbors. Judd Vale was beginning to think in a more rational way. And that was something Smoke had not even considered Judd doing. He'd been counting on the man to continue behaving in his usual emotional and irrational manner. The sudden noise made Smoke cut his eyes, not moving his head. It was no animal. Animals seldom stepped on sticks unless they were running in fear. And there were no follow-up sounds of any animal in panic. He waited, motionless, his breathing very shallow and through his mouth to cut down even the slightest sound. He saw the man move. It was a fatal mistake on the man's part. The movement attracts attention much faster than sound in any deadly game of hide or be killed. The man was dressed in earth tones, blending in well with his surroundings. Smoke concluded that the man was a skilled woodsman, and the stick was the only mistake he had made. He just took one mistake in this game, and that man had just made his. As he drew closer, Smoke could make out his features. One of those he had seen stepping off the train some days before, a bounty hunter. The man carried a Winchester in his hand, a bandolier of cartridges slung over one shoulder. The manhunter stopped, tensed, and suddenly dropped to the ground. Smoke watched through a small space in the pile of brush and dead limbs. What had the man seen? Or had his hunter's sixth sense alerted him of the unseen danger? Probably the latter. Now, it was a game of wait and see, so Smoke waited. Several minutes passed. He could detect no other men, so the bounty hunter was probably working alone. But Smoke couldn't be certain of that. A bird flew into the timber, started to settle on a branch, then abruptly took once more into the air. Smoke's smile was a grim one. He had yet to move his head. Only his cold hunter's eyes had shifted. Now they remained fixed on the dangerous brush where the bounty hunter lay. The top of the brush moved ever so slightly, the movement indicating the man was coming towards Smoke's location, making his way very cautiously. Had he been spotted? Smoke didn't think so. Smoke waited for several minutes, watching the slow movement of the man. He wanted him much closer, close enough to use his knife. He didn't want to risk a shot, not knowing how many others were within earshot of his location. Then, the bounty hunter rose, all in one fluid motion. He was so close that Smoke could see the hard cruelty in his eyes. The bounty hunter moved closer, pausing a few feet from the brush pile where Smoke lay. Smoke exploded out of the brush, his knife in his hand. The bounty hunter wheeled around, his eyes with panic. The rifle in his hands coming up. But Smoke's forward charge knocked the man sprawling, loosening his grip on the Winchester. With one hard swing of the long-bladed knife, Smoke ended the life of the hunter. He took the man's rifle, pistol, and ammo, and then dragged the body into the pile of brush. Smoke made his way back to Dagger using a different route, stashed the weapons, patted the big stallion on the neck, and once more headed out into the woods. This time, he was going to show Judd Vale what he thought of a man who would declare war on women and young boys. And he would write the message in blood. Smoke stayed near the top of a ridge, working his way along, keeping to the brush and timber, not skylining himself. At the highest point of the ridge, Smoke bellied down and made his way to the crest. A bar V hand chose just that time to stick his head up and look Smoke right into the eyes.
Hey!
No!
Smoke clobbered the cowboy right between the eyes with the butt of his Winchester, sending the man sprawling backward out cold. Smoke was over the crest in a flash. He tossed the man's pistol into the brush and smashed the man's rifle useless against the tree trunk. Then he moved down the ridge. A bar V gunny spotted him and raised his rifle to fire. Smoke leveled his Winchester and shot the man in the belly, doubling him over. The fire had reached the hot grease, and the war was on. The landscape seemed to erupt with ugly and very hostile gun hands, and Smoke dived for cover behind a fallen log. He wriggled his way to the other end and rolled into a small depression in the earth. Smoke leveled his Winchester and put an abrupt and permanent halt to one gunfighter's life. Smoke lunged out of the depression and made the timber before the others could get him in gun sights. Shooting uphill was just as tricky as shooting downhill. On the crest of the ridge in deep timber, Smoke settled in for the siege. He dusted one Barbie gunny's position, sending the man hugging the earth and losing his hat. Smoke ducked down as the lead flew all around him.
Seems like a gym daddy time to haul my ashes out of this particular location.
Using the break in the firing, Smoke eased back, clearing the crest of the ridge and began making his way west, working in a slow, careful semicircle until coming to a better, if temporary, area in which to work. He lifted his Winchester and sighted in a foot, sticking out from behind a large rock. Another gunny with more guts than sense left his safe position and moved to what he felt was a better one. Next, Smoke made life miserable for a gun hand who was crouched behind a tree. The man decided to seek better cover and made a run for it. Smoke knocked a leg out from under him and the man rolled down the hill. He finally managed to break his downhill rolling by grabbing onto a small tree and painfully working his way behind it. Smoke let him be and concentrated on the others. They were working their way down the hill, staying in cover, carrying and helping the wounded back out of range of Smoke's deadly rifle fire. Smoke left his position and worked his way back into the deep timber, paralleling the gunny's retreat, sensing from their urgency in the direction of their travel that they were headed for their horses. He was waiting for them when they reached that picket line.
Let's get the hell out of here!
They all vamoosed in a confusing and disorderly retreat, some of them losing their weapons as they stumbled and ran away. Smoke ran into the camp, grabbed up the fallen weapons, and stuck them in empty saddle boots. He grasped as many reins as he could and swung into a saddle. He led the horses back to where he had left Dagger. There, he tied and grouped the horses and headed back for Box A range. All in all, it had been quite a profitable day. It was late night before Smoke reached the ranch house. He put the horses into the corral and told the boys to strip the gear from them and clean and store the weapons. He switched horses and then filled a sack with dynamite and caps and fuses, and he was back in the saddle, heading once more for Bar V range. He made a cold camp, slept for a few hours, and was up at about 3 a.m. He checked his guns and then saddled up. With a grim smile on his lips, Smoke went headhunting under the stars. About 2 miles from the main house and not running into a single Bar B hand, Smoke moved several hundred head of cattle toward the direction of Judd's mansion. He tossed 2 sticks of dynamite near the bunched up herd of Bar B cattle. Wild-eyed cattle hit the mansion grounds at full speed, demolishing several outhouses and destroying one corral. Smoke tossed a stick of dynamite into a bunkhouse. It blew out one entire end of the bunkhouse and sent gun hands in various stages of undress, rolling and running and crawling in all directions. Judd Vail appeared on the balcony of the second floor of the mansion, clad only in his underwear.
Somebody call a
here and get this goddamn cow out of my bedroom!
With his six gun, Smoke put several slugs around Judd's bare feet. The man did a frantic little dance and leaped back into the bedroom, obviously preferring the company of a smelly, wild-eyed cow to the lead that was sending splinters into his tootsies.
You son of a bitch! I got you now!
A puncher grabbed onto Smoke's leg, trying to pull him out of the sack. Smoke laid the barrel of his Colt against the man's head, splitting it wide open and dropping the man to the ground. Riding bent low over his horse's neck, Smoke galloped around to the back of the house. Judd just rebuilt the back porch and replaced all the windows at the rear of the house. Smoke tossed a stick under the back porch. Giant Powder demolished the newly rebuilt porch and once more broke all the windows from the rear of the mighty mansion.
God damn you, Jensen! I'll get you for this. I swear I'll get you. I'll stake you out over an anthill. Let them eat your eyes.